My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. So I'm a member of the South Dixie group. I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. And so I'm in my 40s. I'm deep into my 42nd year. By about 3 weeks or something. And I'm 72. Raised four children sober and seven grandchildren and soon to be eight and married for 41 years and most of the time self-supporting through my own contributions, and it's good to be here. So I'm just going to share a little bit about myself and my experience. And I don't plan any of this stuff, as you will shortly realize. I can't wait to hear what I have to say. It'll be incredible. But I actually have something I'm thinking of saying that I don't really plan what I'm going to say, but I got an idea of what I want to talk about. And it's going to be about sobriety. It's going to be about the solution. I had a, you know, when I came in, they said the newest person is the most important person in the group, right? I believe that. I believe a new person, well, besides me, I think a new person is the most important person in the group. I think it's important. But I want to tell you something. I've been around in this organization for over 41 years now, and I want to let you know something. And what I'm telling you is the truth based upon my experience. All this is based upon my experience, and I have opinions based upon my experience, but, you know, it's like they say in those farmers commercials, we know a lot because we've seen a lot. You know, I mean, after you've been around for a while, you see people go out, you see them drink, you see them not drink. You see what's happened to yourself, you know, so you can sort of speak with authority about what this deal is all about. And in hindsight, you see a lot of stuff. Your story will change. And I'm going to tell you something. There are people in here with 5 years that are fixing on drinking. There are people in here with 5 years or 3 years or 1 year that are fixing on drinking. They're not going to necessarily drink tonight, but they're going to drink in 6 months. And guess what? They don't even know they're going to drink in 6 months, but they're going to drink. There are people in here that have 20 years that are going to drink. There are people in here with 15 years or 13 years or 30 years that are going to drink, not tonight, but in a year or in 6 months they're going to drink. I've been around long enough so that I've seen people pick up white chips who had 8 years, 7 years, 23 years, 35 years, 8 months, 12 months, people who have gone to a lot of meetings, people who have done the steps. I've seen that happen over and over again. As a matter of fact, and I can't prove this mathematically, more people drink and drug than stay sober. I heard once a statistic that I actually read, and I threw away the article. I don't even know how they got this, you know, some sort of sampling. That only 0.5% of the people that come in stay sober for more than 20 years. That's 1 in 200. Probably bullshit, right? But you start thinking about how many people you see picking up 30-year medallions or 40-year medallions or 25-year medallions, and how many people you hear about or talk about how they had 8 years or 9 years or 6 months, 10 years, and then they drank again. You think about how many people you hear about that in AA. You hear more about people drinking after a lengthy period of time than really you hear about people staying sober for 20 or 30 or 40 years, right? I mean, AA's been around for, what, 80 years, 85 years or something like that. You'd think there'd be a lot of people walking around with 40 years and 30 years sobriety. And so even though I know the newcomer is the most important person in the group, I don't really know that. We say that. It makes the newcomer feel good. You know what I mean? What about the guy with 5 years who's going to drink in 6 months? What about the guy who's got 10 years, he's got a wife and kid, and he's going to drink and or do coke or OD in about 5 months? Or so what about, are they important? They're important. You know, like a newcomer who's ready for this thing, and there's a lot of newcomers that are not ready for this thing. And if they're not ready, they're not going to stay sober anyway. I mean, I don't want to make anybody feel bad, but if you're not ready, you're going to hear enough stuff in this. You're going to hear enough stuff in AA that you disagree with, that you don't like. You're going to have enough people telling you to do things you don't want to do. And since defiance is our chief characteristic, you're going to get to a point in time where you're not going to like these meetings. You're not going to want to have a sponsor. You're not going to like your sponsor. You're not going to like him telling you what to do. You're only going to, you know, go to one or two meetings a week, and then you're going to peel off of those. You're not going to like a lot of stuff because you're not ready to stop drinking, and you're going to drink anyway. And it has nothing to do, you know, with what I said or what somebody said or somebody said to you in a meeting. That's just an excuse to drink. And there are other people that want this thing more than anything, want sobriety more than anything. And they're going to hear the same stuff you hear. And they're not going to drink. They're going to end up doing it. And it's because that even though they don't want to do it, they don't want to drink more than they want to do the stuff they're told to do. So I don't worry really about the new person. I mean, I know that sounds horrible, but what the heck? You ought to think about it. The things that sound horrible to you, you ought to think about them for a little while. Maybe, you know, one day you'll have 30, 40 years and you'll say, I know what that guy's talking about. Because here's what I worry about. What happens when you have 10 years sobriety or 20 years sobriety or 5 years sobriety and you're picking up all these medallions and you're not happy? What about the guy who's continually going to meetings, sort of like you do jail time? You go to meetings because you don't want to drink because you don't want to drink. So you go to meetings, but the meetings are boring to you. What about the guy who goes to meetings and has got 5 or 10 years and he's not hearing anything that's helping him? He's hearing this, in his mind, he's hearing the same thing over and over and over again. Not necessarily bad stuff, but stuff he knows or he believes he knows, but it's not solving his problem of having 10 or 15 years and he's lonely. It's not solving his problem, because his problem isn't drinking. He's pretty much cured of the drinking thing, he thinks. He's picking up the medallions, and isn't that what this is all about, joining the drink club? But you want to know something? He doesn't like his life. He doesn't like his wife. She doesn't like her husband. He doesn't like being single. Doesn't like the money situation. Doesn't like the life situation. And they continue to go to AA, but they're not happy with this sobriety. What about that guy? Where does he go to get the stuff he needs so that he's not going to drink? What happens to that? Because I've been that guy. I've been that guy. And you may find that the reason that people drink is because we all get to be that guy or gal sometime during our sobriety. We all get to be that person where not drinking and going to meetings just ain't enough. We all get to be that person where not drinking, going to meetings, and even sponsoring people is not enough. We all get to be that guy and that gal. We're doing everything. I'm doing everything in AA, and it just ain't enough. In Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, the big book says, in Vision for You, here and there once in a while, a former drinker being dry at the moment says, feel better, look better, having a better time. It says, we laugh when we hear that stuff. We laugh at such Sally. We know he'll try the old game again because he's not happy with his sobriety. Soon he'll know loneliness as few do. He'll know loneliness as few do. He'll be at the jumping off place. And then you talk about the four horsemen. What about that guy? Now, I think he's important too. But you know something? That message, the message for that guy, is not necessarily carried in AA rooms. Now, AA is like a giant toolbox. It's like a wrench to fit every nut that walks through the door. And I'm 72 years old. I raised a bunch of kids. I've been through, you know, the wars, you know, the vagaries of life, the cancer, the whole bit. And I've got more to go, I suppose. Haven't died yet. Haven't done that thing yet. It's probably coming up. You know, I think. watched a lot of people I love die. A lot of sponsors died, and a lot of disappointment, a lot of stuff, the vagaries of life that we all go through. And so my story and who I am now and the story I tell now at rooms like this is not the story I would have told when I had 5 years sobriety. And believe me, you know, I'm a good, if I do say so myself, I'm a good storyteller. I can weave yarn. And I was doing conventions before I had 10 years sobriety on the circuit. You know, a lot of you guys know that, and I still do them. And, you know, and so I can tell a story, and they're not bad stories. They're good stories, and they're all about drinking and not drinking, sobriety and all sort of stuff. But I had a guy over at Lester's. We met at Lester's, and he came with me and he says, you know, I'd really like to hear the Leo story. There's a lot of people, probably some in this room, that have listened to some of the tapes, and they have favorite stories. He said, I love the Leo story. I said, oh, yeah, the Leo story. And I haven't told that in a long time. And he said, why don't you tell the Leo story tonight? I said, well, I don't know what Leo's story will fit in, I said. But I understand. I mean, you want to hear the Leo story because that's your story. And then I came in here, and a guy walked up to me. It may have been Ricky. I don't even know. 35. I don't know if it was you or somebody else. Whoever it was says, I love that story you tell about the milk. And I looked at him and I said, seriously, I said, the milk. He said, yeah, the milk story, man. The milk story. Tell the milk story. I haven't heard the milk story in a long time. And I said, and I'm thinking, neither have I, you know what I mean? I haven't heard the milk story in a long time either, you know? And I'm trying to think of the milk story, the milk story, the milk story. And then all of a sudden it came to me and he says, oh, the milk story. Oh, that's a good story. It's about early sobriety. I said, it's a good story. You know, there'll probably come a time one day in this life that I'll probably tell that again. But I haven't told it in years. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just not my story anymore. It's not my story. Okay, I have a different story now. And because what I really talk about now, there's nothing wrong with doing drunkalogs. I had a guy call me up from London, guy sponsor in London. And he said, I have a little bit of a problem. And he said, what? He said, well, I've been getting this person's speakers, these incredible speakers. You know, he's got like 30 plus years and he brings these incredible speakers in that talk to alcoholics in London on Zoom and everything like that. And he said, I have this incredible story. I have this problem. I said, what's the problem? Of course, interestingly enough, when alcoholics think they have problems, they really don't have a problem. They just think they have a problem. So I said, what's the problem? He says, well, the problem is that I have these great speakers coming in and they're talking to everybody about the solution. And I got a call from somebody who says, you're bringing in all these great speakers and they talk about the solution, but the new guys aren't identifying with it. You need to bring in people that talk more about, you know, like drunkalogs, the problem. And they said, I don't know what to say, which I got to find people that talk. And I said, no, you don't have to do any of that. I said, all you have to do is tell them this. Because your problem is you don't know a lot of people that do that, do you? He says, no, because the meetings you go to are a bunch of guys with 20, 30, and 40 years sobriety, and they just want to talk about the solution, right? He says, yeah. He says, so just tell them this. Say, your problem is that the only people you know and you hang out with are people that talk about the solution. Now, you don't hang out around with a lot of people that talk about getting drunk and not getting drunk and going, and not that that isn't important. There are good drunk logs, there are reasons for identification. I said, so just tell them you don't have a large contingent of people that talk about drinking. Most of the people you know talk about staying sober. So just apologize to them and say you'll continue to supply them with people that are going to talk about the solution. But if they want people that talk only about the problem, and then I drank, and then I drank, and then I drank, there's plenty of those people around. And they can find those people. And they're all over the place. But you can't supply them. Can you do that? He says, yeah, I can do that. It's problem solved. So I don't talk about drunk logs, except as they might pertain to emotional sobriety. You know, that's I'm like a one trick pony. And but there's room for people like me, I think, in AA. I think, you know, yeah, maybe not, you know. Such a surprise, that comment coming from you. Yeah. There are people in A that want to stay sober and are interested in staying sober, and there are people in A that just want attention. You always have to recognize the children in AA, the ones that just want attention, the class clowns. Because I was a class clown. There, but for the grace of God, go I. They make fun of everything. They're not serious people. The problem is that they're here, and sometimes what they do is they influence other people that don't know any better. And people can die in here if they don't get the right message. So that's what I'm going to talk about tonight. I'm not going to tell the Leo story, I don't think, or the milk story, or the Folgers coffee story, or the Camaro story, or any of the other stories that have to do with alcoholism. There may be a time that I'll tell them, but I'm going to talk a little bit about the problem. I'm going to talk a little bit about the solution to the problem. And one of the problems in here that most people don't talk about, because, you know, I'm like a God guy. And what happens is when you get to be 72 years old, and you've been through cancer twice, and you raised three or four children, and you got grandchildren, you're hit with all the vagaries of life, and you sponsor the people, and you went through all the stuff where you got to a point where, even with all the stuff you were doing, you still got to a point where you had 15, 20 years and you weren't happy with your sobriety, and then you go through that. When you get up there in years, and every time you hear about somebody dying, get this, how would you like to be this deal? Every time you hear about somebody who's dying, they're younger than you. How would you feel if you got a call and you said, you know, Joe died? He says, really? How old was he? Oh, he was 65. Died of heart attack. Oh, he was 55. Oh, he was 70. And you, so you get the pretty good understanding. Now, I know you guys are in your 30s or 40s, maybe even 50s. I know you think you'll never die. I know you're just looking to get laid. I understand that, okay? Because I was 40 years old and 30 years old, and I know what you're thinking about all the time. I talk a lot to men, mostly to men, because I'm a man and I know men. I've been married 41 years. I have no idea what women are talking about or thinking about. I made the mistake when I first... The reason I'm married 41 years is because for the first few years, I made the mistake of trying to reason with my wife, and then I realized that wouldn't work. So I just say, yes, honey, you're right. You know what I mean? And I threw away the reason thing. So I don't know much about women. But except I love them, and I think they're great, and I have three daughters. You know, once you have daughters and granddaughters, so it gives a whole new aspect to how you feel about women. You know, you look at a woman, she comes up to you and says, man, this is like my daughter. This is like my granddaughter, you know. It's a whole different deal. So I like to talk about things that they... So the things I talk about are probably not things that are talked about much in AA, or at least if they're talked about at all, they're talked about differently. Like when I talk about God, I'll put it this way, like I'm serious. I'm serious about it. It's like a serious thing to me. It's not like a throwaway, like a joke. I just toss it in, or I said, I go to HP. I don't call God HP. I don't care. You want to call him HP? I call him God. That's what Bill Wilson called him. He called him Lord. He called him God. Bill Wilson said, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease. I want to keep talking about him and telling other people. As a matter of fact, you know when that statement is made? It's in Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, when Bill Dodson, the man on the bed, is telling his story, and he says this. He's sober, and he says, I knew there was something more. He was sober, and he says, I knew there was something more, something I hadn't got, a release, a something a person ought to have, and I had no idea what the answer was. And he was looking for the answer, like the guy with 15 years, or the guy with 10 years, or the guy with 5 years, who is doing AA, not drinking, but it's not enough. He's missing something. And he runs into people in AA, because this is what will happen to you. You will run into people in AA who are sober, and you will say to yourself, I don't want what that guy has. You'll hear some guy pissing and moaning and complaining and joking and acting stupid in AA, and he'll have 10 years, and you'll say, and you'll look at it, you might accept, you might laugh, but you're saying, but you're not following him. You're not asking him for help. And then you hear some guy, you know, because they're here, and you'll say, man, I wish I could be like that guy. You'll hear his story, I wish I could be like that guy. And you won't have any idea how this guy with 10 years and that guy with 10 years is so different in that they both have 10 years. And then you'll hear something about emotional sobriety, or the not drinking club, or merely physically sober, or resting on laurels, and you'll hear something about a sixth step that separates the men from the boys, that has nothing to do with drinking, has to do with just the type of sobriety you have, and that the men are those that are repeatedly trying these things for a lifetime so they can grow in the image and likeness of their creator. And you'll see people that talk freely about God because they don't apologize for God. They don't have any prejudice against organized religion. They seem centered. They're always in a good mood. They're enthusiastic. They're excited about their lives. They have 30 years. And then you'll see people that seem different than that, and they still have the same amount of time. And you will get to decide, because the one thing you have the great opportunity to do is you get to make the decision whether you want to have a life of fear or a life of hope, whether you want to grow up, you know, and leave the spiritual kindergarten, which is essentially that broad highway where they dump everything in, atheists, agnostics, you know, bananas, crazy people, whatever, they're all thrown into the hopper, and they all go on that broad highway. But let me tell you something, as time goes on, that road, I can tell you from personal experience, gets narrower and narrower. It gets very, very narrow until the point where only one out of 200 stay sober for more than 20 years and are excited about their sobriety because they've got what's something called the joy of living. Somewhere buried in that thing, in that big book, it talks about people that are being rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, that are experiencing much of heaven. And it says, the great fact is this and nothing less, that they have made God the centerpiece of their lives. That they are convinced that he lives in their heart and their mind in a way which is indeed miraculous, doing for them what they can't do for themselves. And they believe that shit. They believe that God either is or he isn't. What is your decision you're going to make? They made the decision for God. They're not ashamed of God. They're not embarrassed about God. Because all men of faith have courage. They trust their God. They let him demonstrate in their life what he could do. At once, they begin to outgrow fear. And then you have other sober people who say things like, well, I don't like talking about the God stuff so much. You know what I mean? It's not, God isn't like a big thing. It's just something they have in their lives, not putting it down, but it ain't a big deal. You know what I mean? And they're living lives of fear. And they're not happy, and they're not always smiling, and they're in AA, they're sober. As a matter of fact, they don't like it when people talk about God. They feel uncomfortable. There are people, believe it or not, in AA that when somebody talks about God, they are excited to say, this is the shit I'm here for. Mm-hmm. I want the message of weight and depth. I don't want the not drink and go to meeting shit. I want the real deal. Like the guy Dotson said. And then he heard Bill Wilson say, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease. I got to keep talking about it and telling other people. And he said, that's the golden text to me. That changed my life. Bill Wilson, he said he gave all credit to God. His whole life was wrapped around God. And then you see Dr. Bob, the guys who started this thing, our founders, who wrote the book, which they got, quite frankly, from other people. The whole thing was plagiarized from other people. They were following guys like Father Ed Dowling and the Jesuit priest and Sam Shoemaker and the Oxford Movement. And Dr. Bob, what has he said? If you're an atheist, if you're an agnostic, if you have some sort of intellectual pride which stops you from understanding what we're really trying to tell you in this book, I feel sorry for you. Your heavenly Father with a capital H will never let you down. These guys freely talked about God, freely talked about the Lord, freely talked about God, realizing that they were dealing with people, especially when they first came in, that didn't like that. But they allowed them to come in, they brought them anyway, in the hopes they would grow the hell up and get serious and become like them. Because they realized that above everything, they must get rid of this selfishness, they must start killing some, and God would make that possible. And once they seriously decided to turn their life over to God, seriously decided to do that, all sorts of remarkable things were going to happen. God would give them everything they need if they stayed close to him and performed his work well. And they knew who God was, and they knew what the work was. They were never confused. It was about loving and helping other people. By telling them this message. And you have other people, they don't even know what the message is. They have no idea what the real message is. As a matter of fact, they tell an opposite message that sounds like AA, but it's AA light. So let me read you. So unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious and true happiness will find none at all. There are consequences to the disease of alcoholism. There are symptoms to the disease of alcoholism. There are serious symptoms to the disease of alcoholism that most alcoholics don't know about and don't understand, because the only symptom they really understand is the drinking symptom. And that's but a symptom of the disease. The real disease centers in our mind, not our body. And the reason we don't recognize what the real symptoms are is because we are chock full of the symptoms since even before we drank. So let me tell you one of the real consequences of alcoholism. It's in the book, believe it or not, in the story chapter to the agnostics. And this is what it says. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life, let's talk about this. And there's nothing wrong with this, because I was into this for a period of time. We all go through the learning process. You ever hear in the Appendix 2? Some people get by the educational variety. Ever hear the term educational variety? Let me tell you something. You're all being educated. Everybody in AA is going through an educational process. It's an interesting process. It requires repeated humiliation, the final question of our self-sufficiency. You're all being educated. Some of you are going to be educated very, very well, and you're going to do very, very well. And some of you, most of us, let's face it, why does it take the process so long? Because most of us have to do a few grades over again. No, it's the truth. If you're an alcoholic, sometimes you have to go through the same class and the same grade. Sometimes you got to repeat 6 years. I mean, not that you drink again. You'll do the 7 years. You'll have 7 years, but you're really repeating 6 years. You're repeating all the lessons from 6 years. You'll do 8 years, but you're repeating all the lessons from 6 years. You'll do 10 years, but you're really repeating all the lessons from 6 years because you haven't really been properly educated. And you know why you haven't been properly educated? Because in order to be educated properly, you know, you have to utterly abandon yourself to God. And you are being blocked because of something called intellectual pride. Now, let me explain to you what intellectual pride. You ever hear this? I used to hear this in AA. They'd say this all the time. I don't even know they say this anymore. It's a nuclear. They say, when you have 5 years, you'll hear this pop. Anybody ever heard that? They used to say that. You hear this pop, right, Charlie? They said, that's your head coming out of your ass. Well, I'm going to tell you something. You're going to hear that pop at 10 years. You're going to hear that pop at 15 years. And you're going to hear that pop at 25 years if you make it. There are going to be pops all over the place where all of a sudden, holy shit, why did it take me so long? Because we're involved in the educational process. And the process of being educated is getting us closer and closer, like the 11th step says, to have a conscious contact with God and make him the number one thing in our lives. You know why I always talk about God? Think about this. This isn't fucking rocket science. The reason I always talk about God is because I'm involved in the educational process for 41 years. So don't blame me for this shit. Blame Alcoholics Anonymous, because I've been through the educational process. And you go through the educational process, the only thing you're going to talk about is this stuff. Because the Lord has been so wonderful to you, curing you of this disease and the other stuff, that you got to keep talking about it and telling other people. You haven't been through the educational process. All you want to talk about is drinking or not drinking. All you want to talk about is a drunk alarm. All you want to talk about is resentments or something like that. You don't want to talk about the other stuff because you don't know anything about the other stuff because you haven't been properly educated. You haven't skipped the grade. That's the bottom line. So here's what it says. Now, anybody ever heard the word good orderly direction? It's kind of cute. G-O-D, good orderly direction. It's like God. But really what it is it's sort of like a It's like sort of like the Ten Commandments, good orderly direction. Do the next right thing. Do the next right. You believe it? I just do the next right thing. You know, I just do good orderly direction. So let me read you what it says in chapter 8 of Gnostics. I think you guys are bright enough. You try to figure it out. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life, good orderly direction, do the next right thing, sounds good, right? It's like mother and apple pie, were sufficient. It were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. You know, it's like when your mother says, why can't you be like your brother? Why can't you just stop? Why can't you just do this? But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power was not there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed us utterly. You don't have the power to stay sober for 41 years. You don't have the power to have 30 years sobriety and be excited about life. You don't have the power to be happy. You don't have the power to be excited about your life. What you have is you've stumbled upon a thing called AA, which is allowing you not to drink and be unhappy and miserable and live a life of quiet desperation, thinking that you're doing okay. You're like the sixth step says, you've settled. You're resting on your laurels, you know, and headed for trouble. Now, of course, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about most people out there. I can tell this is really a more higher, more spiritual group. Spiritual, not religious, you know. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we going to find this power? Where are you going to find this power? With a capital P this time. Well, that's exactly what this book is all about. You see, what people don't realize is they read this book, but they don't read this book. They read this book, but they don't read this book. They read a book, but they don't understand it. The carpenter said, it's like those who have eyes to see, and ears to hear. They read a book, and they don't understand what they're reading because they haven't dug deep enough. Lack of power, that was our love. We had to find a power which we could live, and we had to be a power greater than ourselves. Obviously, but where and how are we going to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. See, what I'm talking about is what this book is about. Is what this book is about. I'm not talking about, this book is not about not drinking. Because if you're an alcoholic, you will drink unless you find the power. It says, hey, just tell New York, just say, some guy's saying that finding the power is exactly what this book is all about. And you tell him, well, that's exactly what this book is about. Tell him to take that line out of the book because you don't like it. Its main object is to enable you to find a power with a capital P, that means divinity, greater than yourselves, which will solve your problem. That means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral, and it means, of course, that we are going to talk about God. Now listen to this. Here's the next word. You need to listen to this, because I know you guys have read this, but you haven't really read it, have you? You haven't read it like I'm reading it to you. Like when you come up to me after and says, man, I like the way you said that. I said, what do you mean? You mean the way I read the book? He says, yeah, the way you read it. He says, but it's the way you read it, you know? It's like the way you read it, you know? Oh, okay. Here's what they say next. Here, difficulty arises with agnostics. Here, difficulty arises, not even with atheists, with agnostics, with people who say, well, I don't know. Doubters, I'm not sure. Really, I don't know, you know? Here the difficulty arises with agnostics. Many times we talk to a new man and watch his hope rise as we discuss his alcohol problem and explain our fellowship, but his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God. Especially when we mention God. Especially when we mention God. One of the symptoms and one of the things that destroy alcoholics is they hate the concept of God. That's when you really know you're dealing with an alcoholic. That is the disease. The disease is your turning away from God. You don't get that, do you? You don't get why we have to do the third step and give our lives to God. You don't get why we have to do the 11th step. The disease is believing in yourself and not turning and believing in God. You don't understand that. You think it's to make you better and smarter and stronger and not so that you can manage your own life. You may not be reading the book properly. You may not be understanding what they're really trying to tell you when they says, no human power, not you, not your thinking, only God could. You may not be getting this, but his face falls when we speak about spiritual matters, especially when we mention God, for we have reopened a subject which he doesn't really want to talk about. So here's the problem. You ever heard of the game telephone? So let me tell you how the word telephone, if you haven't heard it, most of you have heard it, you know, as kids, we take everybody in this room and we line them up in a line, and I go up to Rick over there, Ricky, and I whisper in his ear, God is the power. Or something, I don't know, something from the big book. And then he whispers to the next person, God is the power. And we go through all the whole thing, and we get to the other end, and says, it gets to the last person, and the person says, God is a banana. Yeah. Somehow it changes. The person either hears it wrong, or hears it, or doesn't like it, or he changes it, and it changes. So we got this fellowship. And we got this big book written in 1939. And the big book says, rarely have I seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And Dr. Bob Goodall Thomas, it says, the books we found absolutely essential were 1 Corinthians 13, Sermon on the Mount, and the Book of James. And it says, we lose all prejudice, even against organized religion. As a matter of fact, we encourage church membership. It says, most of us belong to that deal. You understand what I'm saying? And there is one who has all power. That one is God. And we never apologize for God. You're now a new man. And it says all this stuff. That's what you're going to be educated in. You understand what I'm saying? That's what it says. And that was written in 1939. And they basically were talking about what they did between 1935 and 1939 when they wrote the book. And by the way, the only book they used back then was the Bible. They didn't use the big book because it wasn't written then, okay? And so we have this huge line of people. Millions and millions of alcoholics. And they start off from 1935. And as far as the eye can see, there's this line of alcoholics through 1936, 37, 38, 39, the year 1900, 1950, through 1960, through 1970, through 1980, through 1990, through 2000, 2010, 2020, alcoholics. And the message is passed around from person to person to person. And so I got a call from that same guy, in London. He says, you wouldn't believe what happened. I went to a meeting, and they say, how at the end of the thing, they say, there is one that has all power. That one is God. They took that out. And they put it, there is one that has all power. That one is your higher power. They took out the word God. And he was like upset about it. And I said, well, listen, I'm not surprised. Have you ever played the game telephone? You're just listening to the last man. You're listening to the last man. And most of us in Alcoholics Anonymous, most new people, are getting their theology or getting their AA from the last guy, The guy who's saying, the guy who is actually expressing most of the disease. The guy who's telling everybody, don't talk about God, you'll scare away the newcomer. Don't talk about God, you make people uncomfortable. Don't talk about the real program, you're hurting other people and making you feel guilty for it and leaving the real program in the dust. And let me tell you something. There are a bazillion guys talking about that and saying that. And you want some believing that, believing they're right because they saw a newcomer hear the word God and he walked out of the room and he said, and they're not worried about the guy with 5 years who's about to drink. They're not worried about the guy with 10 years who's about to drink. They're not even worried about the newcomer who's about to drink, because all he's hearing about is not drinking, going to meetings. He's not hearing about the program of recovery. And what you have is you have a group of people that nobody's doing the program of recovery, the real deal, the real program, except a very few. Nobody's being rocketed, and a lot of people are sober, but nobody's being rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. You know, nobody's been, because they're fighting the education. They're fighting the deal. And so I go on these meetings. The meetings I go on are mostly people that have, be honest with you, have 20, 30, and 40 years and 50 years. And all they talk about is the solution. I know Maddie knows what I'm talking about. He goes to those meetings. I know Paul goes to those meetings. And listen, I love newcomers. I'll help a newcomer. We get newcomers on those meetings. You know what happens when the newcomers go to meetings with guys with 30, 40 years that are not scared to talk about God? Within 3 months, they sound like they have 10 years. You'd be amazed at what happens to a newcomer. We've seen it on the Zoom thing. That come and they've never been to anything except boom, about three or four, and all they do is hang around with guys that have 30 and 40 years talking about God and talking about that. In 6 months, you think you're talking about, they start talking, you think the guy has 10 years. They're not even talking about it. They are so far. I go to meetings where guys that have 23 years sobriety talk about how their life has changed, because they finally heard this message about God. And the hackles on their neck weren't standing up, and they hung around men that were talking about God, and they felt permission to talk about God and ask questions. I go to meetings where a gal with 35 years has said, my whole life changed because I went to meetings where they're talking about God. And I didn't want to listen at first, you know? And sometimes they say, I used to hate that stuff. And now it's changed my life, and they're excited. And they're not only not drinking, going to meetings, they're not drinking, going to meetings, and they're enthusiastic. They're not going to drink. You know why? They're having too much fun at 35 years, at 23 years, at 15 years, because it's not about not drinking. It's about the joy of living. So I guess you got to ask yourself, do you want to belong to the not drinking club, or do you want to belong to the joy of living club? You know, that's basically what you have to ultimately make a decision about. You know, whether you want to just go through life, you want to do the treading water thing where you're not drinking, or you want to get involved in a situation where you feel like you're being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, experiencing much of heaven, and not being anxious for anything. You know, it's your life. It's not a dress rehearsal. I'm not here really to convince you of anything. You know why? I'm really not here to convince you of anything. I don't know who's going to get it, who's not. I'm even shocked that most people, I'm even shocked that I got it. You know what I mean? I'm the last guy. I mean, listen, I'm a lounge lizard. I hunt around. I go out every night looking for her. You know what I mean? To nail somebody or get some. I am the most unlikely person to be talking about this stuff at 41 years ever you could possibly imagine. You know what I mean? You know, I'm not here to sell this thing. You know what I'm doing? Because I'm doing what Bill Wilson did. Because God has been so great to me that I got to keep talking about him and telling other people. And I have the ability to do it. And get this, the reason I have the ability to do it is because as I started doing it, when I got to the point in my life where I could do it, I lost fear of other people, other people's judgment. I don't judge myself or walk out of room saying, I wonder what they think about me. You know what I mean? Because I have a God. And I know who my God is, and I know what he wants me to do. And if I'm concerned at all, I'm just concerned that I tell the message that he wants me to tell you. And I'll tell you something, I've had very, very few people come up to me and say, I don't want to hear that message. You know what I mean? They come up to me and they say things like, man, I wish I heard that message more often. Man, why don't I hear that message? This is the only place I hear that message. So apparently there are a few people. I remember one guy came up to me and says, my sponsor says you're a good speaker, but you talk too much about God. That would be on my tombstone. You talk too much about God. And that's his sponsor told him that. His sponsor, the last man on the telephone thing, is telling him that there's something wrong with me because I focus on God. The exact opposite of what the big book says. You understand what I'm saying? He's getting that from his sponsor. He'll believe that. He'll tell another guy that. And he says, you talk so much about God. I said, well, I guess if people don't like it, they'll stop asking me to talk in meetings. I guess they'll stop asking me to talk in meetings. I haven't had a week where I'm not doing like one or two steps or I'm going somewhere because people want to hear this message. They want to hear this message. This is the message they want to hear. The message that guys in the back are rolling their eyes at and saying, oh man, if they talk to me about God, they want to hear this message. The guy with 15 years who's not happy with his sobriety and wants to know, is there anything else? Is that all there is? He wants to hear this message. He needs to hear this message. The guy with 25 years needs to hear that there's something more than the not drinking club. There's something more than the not drinking club. There's something more than just don't drink and go to meetings. So thank you very much.